Welcome to Casual Fridays with me, Jerry Davich, and Karen Walker and Dan Clark. Herb Steverson was a junk box addict, a human garbage can of drugs, specifically heroin. He somehow survived and wrote a book of his heroin experiences and his hope for others in his former situation, titled Junk Box Diaries, A Day in the Life of a Heroin Addict. We will chat with him on today's show. Later in the show, we'll chat with John Zaboyan, a 78-year-old Crown Point man who has a personal challenge for Lakeshore listeners, especially those of you driving while listening to our show. We wonder if you will, or if you can, accept his challenge. And we will challenge listeners with St. Patrick's Day trivia. Plus, I'll give a sneak peek of my Sunday column on the late Chicago author Amy Krauss Rosenthal, who wrote an emotional column before her recent death entitled, You May Want to Marry My Husband. Could you do the same? All that and more after these brief news headlines. Stay tuned, folks. We'll be right back.
Oh, it's Casual Friday.
Casual Friday, what does that mean?
That means we just dress like we would at home.
But you're not at home.
No, but it is Casual Friday, so.
Yeah, I know, you told me that already. What do you do on Casual Friday?
Well, we just come in and do our work, but we dress casually.
I don't like it.
Well, it's just one day of the week.
I don't give a damn if it's half a day a week. I don't like it.
Welcome to Casual Fridays with Jerry Davich, Karen Walker, and Dan Clark. Our show and the Lakeshore are supported by Ken West, American Family Insurance Agency in Hobart and Gary, providing coverage for what matters most.
And if you miss any part of today's show, no worries, right, Karen?
No worries
right,
at all.
Right, Dan? No worries.
No worries.
It'll be re-aired. That's going to be our show. It should be called No Worries. No worries. It'll be re-aired at 7 o'clock tonight and soon posted online, Lakeshore Public.
Radio.
Radio.org. You can find all of our shows, including ones like today's that kind of give Lakeshore listeners a smorgasbord. I love that word, smorgasbord. Of hot issues, local concerns, and a bunch of frivolous nothings. That's what we do.
Herb Steverson was a junk box addict, a human garbage can of drugs. He'd put any type of pill, drug, or legal substance into his body for whatever escape his tie it packed.
Yeah, he didn't care where the drugs came from, who he got them from, or who he lied to or stole from to get them. He wanted to get high round the clock at any cost. To do so, he didn't make friends or form meaningful relationships. He kind of took hostages.
Steverson wrote a book of his heroin experiences and his hope for others in his former situation titled Junk Box Diaries, A Day in the Life of a Heroin Addict. And we'll chat with him on today's show.
We sure will. Later in the show, we'll chat with Josh Seabrook, a U.S. Army veteran who returned from war to return to his life, including being co-owner of Warped Sports, a skateboard shop that just relocated in Crown Point. He came full circle, and so is the sport of skateboarding, as we're going to find out.
Plus, we'll talk with John Zaboyan, a 78-year-old Crown Point man who has a personal challenge for Lakeshore listeners, especially those of you driving while listening to our show. We wonder if you will or can accept this challenge.
Yep, make sure you have your smartphone ready. And we will challenge our listeners with some St. Patrick's Day trivia here on today, St. Patrick's Day. Plus, I'll give a sneak peek of my Sunday column on the late Chicago author Amy Krauss Rosenthal, who wrote an emotional column before her recent death. It was entitled, You May Want to Marry My Husband, which kind of read as a dating profile. She knew she was going to die with a terminal illness, and yeah. I'm wondering how many of us can do the same in that situation.
And we'll touch on Jerry's recent columns in the Post Tribune about our favorite TV show, This Is Us, and how his columns reached the actual cast of the show.
That's pretty cool.
I thought so. All that crazy. And more in today's show. Yeah. If you want to join the discussion or offer a counter view to ours, feel free to call in 769-9577.
Yep. You're welcome to call in anytime. Hey, let's do some. It is St. Patrick's Day. It's a holiday that means virtually nothing to me, but It's always fun to have fun about it. People take us kind of seriously. Well, not only if you're Irish, but...
Alcoholics take it seriously.
Alcoholics, it's the one day of the year they take very seriously, right?
Yeah.
The other day, doesn't matter, let's just get drunk.
Right.
But today we're going to get drunk for a reason.
Something about that green beer that just is very appetizing.
Hey, is the river still green in Chicago?
It might be. I never really...
You don't look at the river when you're driving by?
No, I never see it, actually. I avoid the loop. Probably is, though. I would assume.
What do they
so.
Put in so it doesn't dissolve?
Isn't that weird? It is. I'm not sure what it is, but honestly, the river looks kind of green all year round.
Yeah, so. You're right.
It's called urine.
Right. It's a nice...
From drunks. From the aforementioned alcoholics we were talking about.
Yes.
It's so, a tradition, though.
It is a tradition. Well, this whole day is about tradition.
It is.
It's also the only holiday kind of replete with false claims of national ancestry. I mean, everyone is Irish, if just for a day, right?
Yeah,
you're supposed to be Irish. So like, it's okay to be Irish. Apparently, according to census figures, 34 million Americans list their heritage as either primarily or partially Irish. That's 7 times larger than the population of Ireland itself. So, I mean, everybody is kind of thinking Irish.
Well, you are.
Well, yeah, I didn't know that until literally.
You're Irish?
I know.
Wow.
So I was at the office, the Post-Tribune office, and one of the reporters there, Meredith, is working on a story for today, I think, about Irish ancestry and all that. And she goes, Jerry, you're Irish? And I go, no, I'm Croatian and I'm Swedish and maybe some other stuff, but no, I'm not. I'm sorry. And then I found out that day, literally, my mom did some kind of an ancestry search, and she sent an email to the entire family, including me, saying, I'm partially Irish.
Look wow. at you.
And I had no idea. I'm trying to look for it here. I have it here. Yeah, it's the email I got from my own mom was, our Irish heritage. I'm going, what are you, who's drinking here? You know,
right.
I mean, I'm not Irish. But apparently, we are Irish. And it dates back, and she went from my Nana's grandfather to his granddad to his dad, going back to Kentucky and then going back to South Carolina and then going back to Antrim, Ireland in 1743. Our ancestors go back. So I'm Irish.
Wow. Did you go back and correct the record for the paper then?
No.
Oh, my gosh.
I did not. I totally forgot about it. But so I guess everybody might be kind of Irish is my point. And I didn't.
Well, congratulations.
I didn't realize
that. How does it feel?
No, no different at all. And okay. I still don't want to drink, so maybe I should. So for hundreds of years, people have been kissing the Blarney Stone in Ireland. Do you know why they kiss the
I thought they
Blarney
do it for good
Stone?
Luck.
Dan, do you know? Is
no,
it good luck?
I have no idea.
Kissing Ireland's Blarney Stone, a tradition that's been around for several centuries, is said to give person the gift of eloquence and persuasiveness. The iconic stone is set in a wall of Blarney Castle, constructed in 1446. Can you imagine that? Hmm. I mean, even our country, we don't think back that far back.
Yeah,
but
that's a long time ago.
Yeah, 1446. It was constructed by Dermot McCarthy, King of Munster. I'm literally on the
King
site
of Munster?
On the site of demolished 13th century castle. So various legends surround the Blarney Stone's origins. One story holds it was acquired during the Crusades and brought to Ireland, while another claims it was made from the same material used at Stonehenge.
Oh wow!
So you go there. It is for good luck.
Yeah, but isn't it really hard to reach? Like you have to like crawl and like bend over backwards.
Well, when I was there, I was never there.
You were never there.
So I really have no idea.
I would not be kissing that thing. It's probably so diseased by now. It's diseased.
Just think of who all the people you've kissed in your life.
Not as many as the Blarney Stone's been kissed by way more people than I've ever kissed.
Yeah, but some people you've kissed have probably kind of felt like stone anyway, right?
that's true.
Gave you nothing back. So there's the Blarney Stone trivia. And also, a little bit more trivia on the St. Patrick's Day. Is according to folklore, a leprechaun is really an Irish what? Is it A, a shoemaker, B, a thief, C, a magician, or D, a prankster?
A thief.
What would a leprechaun be according to
Irish
folklore?
I'd say a thief, because that's how he got his pot of gold.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Karen there. That seems about right.
Okay, let me look it up here. Leprechauns are shoemakers.
Oh, whoa.
Some researchers claim that the word leprechaun came from the Irish lith brigon, meaning shoemaker, said to be the Sprite's main vocation. The sprite. They are sprites, aren't they?
Little sprites.
So if you happen to come across a leprechaun, be sure to hold on to him. According to Irish legends, people lucky enough to capture a leprechaun can barter his freedom for three wishes. But dealing with a leprechaun can be a tricky proposition.
So a
leprechaun is also, they just said, a leprechaun is a trickster figure who cannot be trusted. So there you go. So there's a shoemaker figure who can't be trusted.
Yeah.
It's interesting why we care about this kind of stuff. You know, St. Patrick's Day. Why does it? It kind of captures
What's
all of
us. What's a shillelagh? Isn't that like
a
stick?
Oh my God! I forgot. Yes.
That's a stick, isn't it? It's like a walking.
Say it
stick.
Again.
Shillelagh.
Oh my God! Shillelagh. I love that.
We had a Sarah and I were driving to school this morning, and they had this guy on calling in because he's really from Ireland. Basically, it was Irish Dave from U93. He was calling in.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Irish Dave on today on Irish Day.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but anyway. That,
big deal for him.
Yeah, he was just calling in to say, I'm Irish, and this is what we do in Ireland, but, you know. And he
just prove how Irish he was.
Yeah, that was really it. I got to meet him, and I wasn't impressed.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that?
An event.
Yeah, right. Yeah, but he's not even on U93 anymore, so I guess there's really no point to my story. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Don't be impressed by Irish Dave.
So I'm wondering, what the shillelagh thing is that when we were thinking of going to this St. Patrick's Day parade in Crown Point this evening,
I
said if it wasn't so cold out and I freeze my shillelagh off, then I would go. But so what's a shillelagh?
I think it's a walking stick.
So you were kind of in the right realm with using shillelagh there.
Yeah, I guess so.
Shillelagh.
But I'm bummed. Yeah, I guess so. I didn't think of it like that. But either way, so
life.
What's that?
Oh, nothing.
Oh. So Sarah is with us again in the studio. Sarah, the intern here at Lakeshore. And you mentioned this business in Valpo. Just give a shout out for it. I mean, I didn't even know.
Yeah, so Hotshot Valpo is a glass blowing studio downtown Valparaiso, Indiana. And they're going to be doing some demonstrations tonight Feel free to stop on in. They'd
for
love
St. Patty's
to,
Day.
Yeah, for St. Patrick's Day. So they would love to have you guys come in and just watch them see what they do.
Interesting. There you go.
I've never witnessed that before.
It's a pretty amazing process how you can turn like just molten glass into something absolutely beautiful.
I should write about this, shouldn't I?
Okay.
Yeah, something like that. Never thought about that before. So if you're into the St. Patrick's Day festivities, happy St. Patrick's Day to you and yours, right,
yes,
Karen?
Yes, yes, yeah, absolutely.
There's no downside about it unless you're,
wish you know, I had some Gaelic
unless
pros
you get too drunk
to
today
there,
and you run into us. You have no Gaelic pros?
I have no Gaelic pros. Like, isn't there one like said the wind be always at your back and the road be always to meet you or something like that?
I just
that.
Love hearing you talk Irish. I really do.
That's not even Irish. It's probably real
Scottish. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know what it is.
All I could do for Scottish is Scotty from Star Trek. That's all I got.
Well, say it. Do it.
No, I don't have it.
Okay, then.
That's my point. Either way, happy St. Pat's. Let's move on from there.
Yes.
Next up, I wrote a column last week involving a Valparaiso guy named Herb Steverson. He wrote a book recently called Junk Box Diaries, A Day in the Life of a Heroin Addict, that I found pretty gripping, well-written, and interesting. I have a lot of vested interest in this topic. I've written about it several times through the years. I also have a personal interest in it. No, I'm not a recovering junkie, but I have an interest in it. So we invited Herb to call into the show, and he is on our show right now. Herb, welcome to Casual Fridays.
Oh, hello. Happy St. Patty's Day. How is everybody?
We're doing
good.
Happy St. Patty's Day to you, too, and thanks for being a part of our show.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. You know, you passed along a copy of your book to me a week or so ago, and I get a lot of books kind of dropped on my lap, so to speak, and some books I read and some I don't get through. Some I barely get through the table of contents, and I go, I'm never going to read this book. I just know I won't. Your book was gripping, though. It was well-written, Herb, and you wrote it like I was with you in the back seat of your car as you're searching for drugs in the side streets of Chicago.
Thank you very much.
And it resonated with me because I know how that feels in a way to do that through personal experiences and also through writing about it. And I'm hoping your book can maybe help other people in your former situation. But to give our Lakeshore listeners an idea of who the heck you are, when did you first start getting involved with drugs at all?
Well, the first drug that I ever used, I believe I was right around 15, maybe 16.
Shame on you.
And it was the legal drug that no one thinks is a drug, alcohol.
Oh, alcohol. Oh, yeah, of course. That's So, you know, a lot of critics of drug use, so to speak, they will say gateway drugs, gateway things. Do you view alcohol as a gateway?
Honestly, yes. I believe alcohol is more of a gateway drug than marijuana. But if I want to be completely honest with you, the first mood or mind-altering substance that I ever put in my body was tobacco. I remember sneaking half cigarette butts out of my parents' ashtray and smoking them because they gave me a buzz.
So do you think you had a predisposition to any kind of escapism drug use at all, whether it's nicotine or alcohol? No matter what it was, you were going to pick it up and use it because you are you?
Well, I don't think that it was a no matter what I was gonna, but I do believe I have the genetic predisposition. But ultimately, I always, you used the word perfectly, escapism. That's what it was all about for me. I didn't like the way that I felt. I didn't like uncomfortable situations. I didn't like fear, pain, panic, rejection, loneliness, responsibility, etc.
None of us
and
do,
so,
Herb.
Yeah. I know, right?
But I escaped into food. That's what I escaped into. Yeah, me and Cinnabons, I can inhale those. I can snort them.
Oh, man.
So, okay.
I wouldn't recommend that.
No, don't recommend that. So you were doing, you're drinking alcohol, you were smoking, and then I'm guessing you also smoked pot at some point?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It was like as soon as I drank, it was almost like a tumbler and a lock fell, so to speak. As soon as I drank, I was immediately curious about what else was out there. And I believe I was a drug addict before I ever even put a substance into my body because it was like my stars had aligned and I was immediately obsessing over pot or mushrooms or pills or the next drunk. You know, it wasn't like an anticipation, like being excited for Christmas. It was like an obsession. So I'd go to school on Monday morning obsessed with Friday night, and it was all downhill from there.
Do you remember your first experience with heroin?
Vaguely. I was, let's see here. I was about 17, I want to say. I was going to the adult education at or career center here in Valpo.
Uh-huh.
And I was seeing a girl, and one of the teachers or guidance counselors came in and said, hey, Steve, everybody called me Steve then. They said, your cousin's here. There's a family emergency. And this was just a friend of mine that I knew. And I looked over my shoulder, and she was there, and I knew it wasn't a family emergency, that she wanted to go party. And next thing I know, I'm sitting in front of the Pershing Projects on the south side of Chicago while she's running in, quote-unquote, to get weed. And she comes out with weed and with a couple bags of crack and a couple bags of heroin. And I was so intrigued by using and getting messed up that I would do anything that was in front of me. And
before that point, did you ever use a needle?
No, I didn't even use a needle this day.
I see.
I snorted it. It was a while before I ever used a needle. But, you know, like I said, junk box, you know what I mean? It didn't matter. I had no qualms whatsoever about what went into my body. You know, ecstasy, pills, you know, heroin, cocaine. But what ultimately really ignited my hunger for heroin was prescription pain medication.
That's pretty common. I hear from a lot of let's say school counselors and people in recovery business talking about teenagers, and it's so easy to get because it's in everybody's home somewhere usually.
Exactly. And we used to party when I was like, you know, in high school with all the typical, quote unquote, typical partying, you know, the drinking on the weekends and stuff. And as my friends changed to accommodate my drug usage and the way that I drank, things switched from, hey, you know, can you steal any scotch from your old man, or does your mom have any wine coolers, to what's behind your parents' medicine cabinet?
Yeah, it's so accessible. And a lot of parents, I believe, are kind of clueless, and especially grandparents who have medications like everywhere.
Yeah.
And a lot of them they don't use for months, which does not matter to a drug addict. You'll use anything that's expired. You don't care.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm just going to ask you to, if you could fast forward for us. I know you've had this book, it details exactly everything you went through almost on a daily basis of driving to find your drugs and then recovering and eating out of a dumpster and stealing and begging and borrowing, whatever it might take. But eventually you used heroin so much, of course, you became a junkie. You didn't know how to get off of it. But let's fast forward to what started slapping you around to reality to try to get you out of that addiction. What was it, besides being arrested several times, correct?
Well, correct, but, you know, really, I never, you know, I lived on the bottom for a long time. You know, reading my book and, you know, friends and family of mine who were close by, you know, you knew I was at the bottom, but the issue was nothing really, as you put it, slapped me around to reality, and there's a couple reasons for that. One, obviously, was because the drugs kept me so numb. You know, heroin literally numbs your mind, body, and spirit, so I was more or less, I don't want to say oblivious to my consequences because they were staring me in the face.
Right.
But because my being was so numb from such a powerful drug, I didn't actually feel the bottom.
I see.
The other reason why I didn't feel the bottom is because my family always felt it for me. You know, mm-hmm. They're the ones who were, you know, calling counselors and calling lawyers and staying up all night praying that the coroner doesn't call, you know, et cetera. And so ultimately, I never really got slapped around by reality until I was about 5 months clean sitting in Porter County Jail.
I see. How old are you now, Herb?
31.
31. If you're just tuning in now, we're talking with Herb Steverson. He's a recovering heroin addict and the author of the book Junk Box Diaries about his experiences as an addict and now as a recovering addict. So, okay, 5 months or so after you were in jail, did you have, was it an epiphany or an evolution to get you out of that?
Well, here's the thing, you know, in recovery, we talk about a spiritual experience, you know, as being what it takes to, you know, kind of jar us toward the right path. And everybody automatically assumes that a spiritual experience has to be a positive thing. But for me, I had a spiritual experience that was the most negative thing I've ever felt in my life. And it was indeed an epiphany, but it wasn't a positive one. I had kind of been in jail for a while, facing, you know, several decades at 29 years old, living my psychological bottom in a jail cell. And as I kind of played the tape of my life over and over and over in my head, I decided that this world and this life was better off without me, and I was going to take my own life. And the feelings that came along with that was my spiritual experience, which indeed jarred me toward, you know, wanting to turn things around.
Isn't that pretty common, Herb, for somebody to find God when they're at their depths of, you know, like it's an atheist in the foxhole kind of thing? I mean, you didn't find God before then, though, did you?
Well, I knew what God was, quote, you know, quote, what God was, what God is. I knew about, you know, about my faith, but I had never actually had any kind of experience to where I realized how powerless I am and how I cannot do this on my own. And it wasn't necessarily just a God thing at that time. It was a need for positive relationship. It was a need for, you know, healthy living structure and to turn things around along with God and, you know, recovering fellowships. And I just knew in that moment that if I ever continued to try to live life on my own, I was going to die with a needle in my arm.
Yeah, and so many people, as we know, Dan Clark, you must report the news on a daily basis of all the heroin-related deaths.
We're definitely, not just us in Northwest Indiana, but really the country, are in an epidemic right now.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
We kind of forget that until we see these police blotter headlines time and again.
What's your take on the needle exchange programs? Do you find those to be a helpful thing, or is that something that you don't think is a helpful thing?
Well, as far as like the needle exchange specifically, we have to look at it, you know, realistically. Us junkies, us addicts, we're going to use a needle anyways.
Mm-hmm.
So might as well offer the opportunity for somebody to use a clean needle.
Sure.
To at least limit the spread of Hep C, HIV, staph infections, things like that.
Right.
You know, because we're going to do what we're going to do anyways.
Sure. Either way, it's at least you're getting, you're not going to have the chance to get some disease that's incurable for something you can't really stop doing.
Correct. You know, so do I think that we should hand them a bag of heroin with the needle? Absolutely not. But
sure,
if we can at least save one person from catching Hep C or HIV, why not?
Yeah.
So, Herb, do you think your book has a shot at saving that one person, that one special starfish, according to the parable, the old parable? I mean, you're hoping to save people, right?
You know, I absolutely do. And, you know, I hope that this can come over across the phone, that this is coming from the most humble place inside of me. I believe it already has. You know, the feedback that I've gotten since this book came out, sometimes I get emails, man, that just leave me, like, teary-eyed. Because, you know, it hits for everybody. You know, the moms especially who have lost someone or who are in the process of possibly losing someone.
Right.
You know, it gives them hope. It paints an accurate picture of what's really going on, because it's not just say no and this is your brain on drugs and hi, I'm Scruff McGruff, you know, but it's morbid, painful details of what it's like out there. Hopefully it can prevent a young person from ever picking up. Hopefully it can get some judges and some policymakers to open up their eyes that we cannot incarcerate our way out of this problem. Hopefully it will provide hope to the struggling addict, and hopefully it will reinforce the bottom of the addict who's in recovery today.
And hopefully you will talk to some middle school or high school kids mm-hmm. along the way mm-hmm. and preach this message and show them where you were, where you're coming to, how you are today, and why you wrote this book. I mean, you got to touch people. The question I asked you after I spoke with you initially was the question I ask most addicts and users. If you read this book or heard this message from a guy named Herb when you were 15, 16, or 17, would it have altered your decision-making process? I'm skeptical that it would have, but would have?
And do you want my honest answer?
No, lie to me, please.
Probably not.
Yeah, probably not, right.
But here's the thing. When I was 15 or 16 years old, couldn't nobody tell me anything.
Yeah.
You know, I knew it all.
Yeah, you did. We all did. We all did at that age. That's no doubt about it. Well, if you're looking for the book, you could find it's called Junk Box Diaries by Herb Stevenson. Herb, you know, when I wrote about this initially, I was hoping that it might help that one person. And I also hope some power brokers, decision makers, lawmakers would maybe pick it up, learn something more about this issue they didn't know about, and maybe make some more decisions that can affect more people than just a book. What do you think?
Honestly, that's it. It's got to get noticed for what it is, you know, because so many people think that we can just incarcerate our way out of this problem, and so many people think that it's not a problem until their son dies or until their nephew dies.
Then
you know,
it's a
people
problem.
Wanna, right. And another thing that kind of irks me a little bit is there's still so much shame and stigma and taboo attached to this subject that, you know, as long as addicts feel shamed and feel guilted away from society, few of them are going to ever want to come forward and ask for the help.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we wanted to have you on Casual Fridays, Herb. We appreciate your time today, too.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on here. You know, it's a real blessing to be able to carry the message, man. It really is. So I'm very grateful.
You're very welcome, Herb. Take care and good luck.
You too. Thanks a lot.
All right, folks, listen to Casual Fridays. Jerry, Dan, and Karen. We just talked with Herb Steverson, author of Junk Box Diaries. Tell you what, let's take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to chat with Josh Seabrook, a U.S. Army veteran who returned from war to return to his life, including now being co-owner of Warp Sports, a skateboard shop that just relocated to Crown Point. He came full circle, and so was the sport of skateboarding, I believe. Stay tuned.
Did you know you can name Lakeshore Public Radio as a beneficiary in your insurance policy or IRA? You may receive additional financial benefits as well. For more information on creating this kind of legacy gift, talk with your financial advisor or call Wendy Burbridge at Lakeshore Public Radio, 219-756-5656. Thank you.
Press conferences, executive orders, meetings with foreign leaders. There is plenty to follow in the first 100 days of the new administration, and NPR News will be there, digging deep into the facts and bringing you multiple points of view. Listen every day.
Right here to Lakeshore Public Radio.
Every Friday evening, right here on the set of Lakeshore Focus, I will be interviewing some of the region's most interesting people. Join us for an in-depth look at Northwest Indiana issues every Friday night at 7:30 on Lakeshore Public Television.
You're listening to Casual Fridays with Jerry Davich and Karen Walker. Be here every Friday.
Bill Curtis, the man, the myth, the legend.
He said our names. Welcome to Casual Friday with Jerry, Karen, and Dan. Our show and the lecture are supported by Ken West, American Family Insurance Agency, and Hobart & Gary, providing coverage for what matters most.
If you miss any part of today's show, no worries. It's recorded at 7 o'clock tonight. Re-aired.
7 o'clock tonight.
Sorry about that. And also you can find it at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Welcome back, folks. Last week, I visited a shop in Crown Point called Warp Sports. It's a skateboard shop and a paintboard shop. And I met a gentleman named Josh Seabrook, who's a U.S. Army veteran. And I find it very interesting because a lot of soldiers will go off to war on a tour of duty, and they will take something with them. Maybe it's a harmonica, guitar, pictures, family keepsakes, that kind of thing. Josh, he took a skateboard.
What?
He tucked in his duffel bag, and he took it with him, and he even kept doing that when he was overseas serving. So we welcome him into our show. Josh, welcome to Casual Fridays.
How's it going, guys? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for your patience to be on the show. I appreciate it.
I
was really impressed talking with you, Josh. And not only because you served our country, and thank you for doing so. It's something that I've never done and something I would never do, to be honest. So I appreciate you doing that. But also that you kept up a passion, a childhood passion of yours all through your life. And a lot of us don't. We do certain things when we're kids. You did skateboarding, and it never left you. Why does skateboarding matter to you after all these years?
I mean, I guess, you know, skateboarding is different than a lot of sports. I don't know, it's one of those things that, I mean, you do as a kid, you kind of just start messing around, but, I mean, it sticks with you into adulthood. I think a lot of people, without sounding like too cheesy, but, I mean, when you're skating, you're kind of like free your mind, and all you think about is skateboarding or landing a certain trick, so it's a good stress reliever, you know, too, so, and it's challenging.
It's very challenging.
Yeah,
you know,
no
Karen's
kidding.
Daughter, Sarah, is 15, and she just took up skateboarding for the first time over the last summer.
Mm-hmm.
And we would take her to a church near our home, and she would just skate back and forth.
Back and forth.
At a pretty slow pace. And it looks really like too slow. So I said, well, let me try that, you know, just for a minute.
Yeah.
My God.
I know, right?
It scared the bejeebers out of me, Josh. I mean, because I felt I had no control at all.
That's it.
And I didn't want to be this 50-some-year-old guy who falls off a skateboard and tells the ER doctor that, you know. Like, what the hell are you doing, mister?
Right?
But I understand it. It is tricky business. But also, I noticed that... it's still around. I see kids all the time at skate parks around the region and going up and down streets and going off of like
steps,
curbs, you name it. So it's not faded away. Is it more popular than it used to be, or is it back on the upswing?
I think. I mean, it kind of goes in seasons. I mean, we've kind of like seen the peaks and troughs, and now I think we're coming at another peak. But I mean, from the times, I mean, I've been skating for at least 20 years, but I mean, I can remember, you know, skateboarding in the early 90s, mid-90s, where skateboarding was not cool and it was definitely frowned upon. And then with the X Games and Tony Hawk Pro Skater and all that coming out, then there was a big spike there where it was an increase. And then, you know, it kind of died out a little bit after that, you know, around, you know, the 04, 05 time. And then now it seems like it's starting to peak again. And we got the Olympics. You know, skateboarding is going to be in the Olympics in 2020 in the Summer Games. So.
Right. I didn't know that. Wow.
So it kind of came full circle, more mainstream. Back when I was a kid, something that I noted in my column today in the Post Tribune is when I was a kid and skateboarders, the skateboarders were like surly. You know, they were like, there was like a punk rock movement on wheels.
Yeah.
And a lot of them, at least in my neighborhood, that's what I identified skateboarders with. You know, mm-hmm. It's like you just don't mess with the skateboard kids. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? They're listening Sid Vicious, and, you know, and the Sex Pistols and stuff, and they'll kill it. Yeah, right, exactly. It's dangerous stuff. So was that around when you were young also, or is that one of the peaks and valleys that
I missed? Well, I mean, I guess with skateboarding, I mean, there's always different types of skaters. There's always different types of skating just in general. But, yeah, I mean, we did, you know, when I first started, it was definitely more of a, like, not to say a rebel, but more like a punk rock thing. I mean, a lot of the skateboarders were into punk rock music, and I mean, we were getting heckled when I was like sixth grade through eighth grade. I mean, the skateboarders were getting heckled. I mean, we were getting, you know, yelled at if we're skating down the road. People would be, you know, screaming like "skate or die," or they, you know,
"skate or die,"
yell some derogatory thing, you know, out the window. Where now it's not, that doesn't even happen anymore. You know, not at least not like it was back then.
And didn't some like football student kids try to pick a fight with you also back in the day?
Yeah, I mean, that probably happened more times than it should have. But yeah, we would skate at Andrean High School.
That's Karen's school.
Off of Broadway in Maryville. And yeah, when the football practice got out, you know, all these football players are seeing like me and some of my buddies skating.
Damn jobs.
And yeah, they want to pick a fight with us for skating at their school, you know, for no reason. But
why would you pick Andrean to skate at?
It's just nearby. I mean, we all grew up in that area, so it was just, you know, when you're a young skateboard kid, no car, you're just skating around, you know.
You know, in the back of my dental office, we have these four small steps with a railing, and we get skateboard enthusiasts all the time at our office, to where we have to tell them you cannot skate these stairs. We've threatened to call the police. They just keep coming back. So.
Josh, are there little notches put in some of these stairs or some of this infrastructure in our streets to avoid
that?
That's
still a thing. It's probably not as common in Northwest Indiana. I mean, it's still there, but in Chicago, it's really common. I mean, they put if you're looking at a bench or a ledge, you're going to see the little knobs on it, or a railing that's got knobs on it, and those are all just skateboard stopping things designed to keep people from, you know, skating those stairs or skating those benches.
That's the man keeping you down, Josh.
That's no doubt. That is exactly what that is.
But oddly enough, when I met you at your store, Warp Sports, which I think relocated to Crown Point, 103 North Main Street, is that correct?
Yeah, we just opened up on the square.
Oh, cool.
So when I visited your store, I asked you the question that now you're 33 and you're married and you're still skateboarding, but you're now kind of like the man in a way because you got these punk kids coming into your store now because you have better visibility in the square. And they're walking in probably with backpacks. And I know I used to be a business owner. I would watch these people like, hey, kid, you know, one at a time, hands in your pocket, don't take any of my stuff. So you kind of came full circle in a way. So are you watching these new young kids coming in? Do they remind yourself of you when you were a kid, or is it a different breed?
No, it's, I mean, in a lot of ways it's the same. I mean, I'm definitely like hawking these kids when they come in there, because they'll come after school to be 10 kids with book bags on, you know.
Oh my God, yeah.
So yeah, you definitely, that changed where the, you know, 20 years ago that was me, you know, coming into the store. But now, you know, yeah, that definitely changed. But I mean, I don't know, with the kids nowadays, I mean, we didn't have, I mean, we had the internet, but it was nothing like it is now, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we didn't have, I mean, the cell phones. I mean, we didn't have all that information so relevant.
Every kid's got a
phone.
There's
definitely some differences.
Every kid's got a phone now. Mm-hmm. If anything, just to compare prices, darn it, right? Probably.
Yeah.
Oh, definitely, yeah, yeah. I mean, I had a pager. When I was 15, I had a pager. I didn't have a phone yet.
Wow.
Yeah, but there's not a lot of stores like yours in the region. I mean, honestly.
No, there's not a lot. I mean, it's definitely a niche.
Yeah, so you got the market cornered slightly.
In a way, but I mean, so people, I mean, are so used to ordering stuff online or through Amazon.
Yeah, that's the enemy. That's the competitor.
That's the man now.
So now we're trying to push that shop local, you know, support your local skate shop. I mean, there's some things we're trying to do as far as like rehabbing Crown Point Skate Park. We're working with the Parks Department there. We're working with the Parks Department in Lowell to try to rehab some of those ramps. And
the skate parks that I see, they're pretty dilapidated, Josh.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the skate parks. Yeah, you're right. A lot of the skate parks around here are, I mean, every bit of 15, 20 years old.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they definitely need some maintenance.
Our CEO, James Muhammad's son, is a huge, like, avid skateboarder, and I know he doesn't even go to skate out here. He'll actually go to Chicago because he says that the parks are...
That much better, huh?
That much better, yeah. So they should fix stuff up out here.
Well, we hope they do.
Yeah.
So also, Josh, I mentioned in my column and also earlier on the show that you took a skateboard with you when you served Uncle Sam overseas. You were in the U.S. Army. You served in Iraq and Afghanistan, I believe. And why the skateboard? I mean, was it like a security blanket? Was it just for fun, a release?
Definitely. All those things. It was definitely a release. It was for fun. But, I mean, it's kind of like... I mean, you work so hard to learn skateboard tricks. It's so much, you know, perseverance and time that if I knew, you know, I knew I'm going to Afghanistan for a year, I'm like, I'm bringing my board. If the opportunity comes where I can skate, I'm going to try to take it, you know?
And you did skate there, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I actually, I built a little grind box. I mean, I skated where I could. It was a little bit difficult, but towards the end of my tour in Afghanistan, they built a running track, and they had paved the track. So people could run laps. So then I would take all my skate stuff to the track. But I had to bring my M16, had to bring my rifle, had to bring ammo.
Nice.
Wow.
Had to have another person with me, and then I would skate around this track.
Oh my
you know?
Gosh.
I'm very ignorant on what Afghanistan is like, but I just picture a lot of sand. It seems very...
You know what? In Afghanistan, I was in Kabul.
Okay.
A lot of mountains, snow-capped mountains. A little bit greener than I thought when I went there, but when I was in Iraq, I skated in Iraq also, and there was tons of sand there. I would have to sweep where I was going to skate. I'd have to sweep it every time before I skated because it would be covered with sand from like sandstorms just blowing in.
Mm-hmm.
So,
wow!
Do you still have that board that you took to Afghanistan?
I wish I did. I had on the one I went to Iraq. I went to Lake Tahoe before, so I had to keep Lake Tahoe blue sticker on it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know what happened to that board. But
bummer.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is when you go through so many boards. But
true.
Yeah, when I was in Iraq, I wanted to say we did. You know, I'm out of the military now, so I can say it without any repercussions. But I mean, with the taxpayers' money, we did build a little half pipe in Iraq. So.
You're very welcome, Josh.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks to all of you guys. Everyone out there who pays their tax.
Josh, before we let you go, what kind of reaction did you get when you took your board to serve either Iraq or Afghanistan or with other troops? Did people like it? Did they enjoy watching you do it? Did they kind of tease you about it? Would people pick a fight with you still?
When I was in Afghanistan, people kind of gave me a hard time about it. I mean, I was young. I was like a PFC, you know, a private in the military, pretty much skating, trying to do whatever I want to do on my free time.
Right.
I got a little bit of a hard time there, but when I was in Iraq, I was already a sergeant. I was like a squad leader, so I had, you know, a little bit different position, but people still were like, oh, Sergeant Seabrook's going skating. Like, where are you going? You know? But Once they seen what we built out there, people wanted to come hang out and check it out. So.
I'll bet. Bring a little bit of America over there, too.
Yeah.
Well, Josh, tell you what, if people want to learn more about you and your return from the service and about Warp Sports, they can check out my column today in the Post Tribune. I'm also going to post it on Facebook soon. We appreciate you being a part of our show. We really appreciate you serving the country. Thanks a lot, Josh.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. You guys have a good day.
All right.
You too.
Take care. Good guy, huh?
Yeah. It's good really, guy. Man, I can't picture skateboarding out.
There's
like
photos
a rock
online.
That's awesome.
It's on my Chicago Tribune webpage.
Really cool.
There's a photo of him skating there and also hanging with some kids and taking a photo up with the kids.
Oh, yeah.
So it's good stuff. So tell you what, let's listen to Casual Fridays, folks. Let's take another short break. When we come back, we're going to chat, we hope, with John Zaboyan. He's from Crown Point. He's got a challenge to all the Casual Fridays and Lakeshore listeners. We're wondering if you can take it or if you will take it. And I personally cannot take it. So we'll give you the details in just a minute. Stay tuned, folks.
Every Friday evening, right here on the set of Lakeshore Focus, I will be interviewing some of the region's most interesting people. Join us for an in-depth look at Northwest Indiana issues every Friday night at 7:30 on Lakeshore Public Television.
Press conferences, executive orders, meetings with foreign leaders. There is plenty to follow in the first 100 days of the new administration, and NPR News will be there, digging deep into the facts and bringing you multiple points of view. Listen every day.
Right here to Lakeshore Public Radio.
Did you know you can name Lakeshore Public Radio as a beneficiary in your insurance policy or IRA? You may receive additional financial benefits as well. For more information on creating this kind of legacy gift, talk with your financial advisor or call Wendy Burbridge at Lakeshore Public Radio, 219-756-5656. Thank you.
Listen, this is Billy Gardell from Mike and Molly. And if you have any sense in your head, you'll listen to Jerry Davidge and Karen Walker on Casual Fridays.
Oh, man.
Thank you so much. Welcome back to Casual Fridays with Jerry, Karen, and Dan. Our show on the Lakeshore is supported by Ken West, American Family Insurance Agency in Oberlin and Gary, providing coverage for matters most.
Yep. If you miss any part of today's show, it's re-air at 7 o'clock tonight, and you can find our stuff, all of our stuff, well, most of our stuff, at lakeshorepublicradio.org, any previous show you may have missed. I met a gentleman named John Zaboyan, lives in Crown Point, a couple days ago. At a restaurant, the Great Harvest Bread Company
place.
Oh,
you love that.
They give free samples of bread. It's like, for me, I'm a junkie, an addict for bread. So
Asiago cheese bread. Have you gotten that there?
No.
You cut it up and grill it. It's really good. You should get that. Asiago cheese
bread. Next time I'm getting that. Yeah. So I met John there, and John he created a program, so to speak, called SADD, S-A-A-D-D, about distracted driving and what's the perils about distracted driving. And we all, well, not all of us, but most of us are distracted drivers.
Yes.
Whether it's the radio, whether it's eating, whether it's texting, checking Facebook statuses, calling somebody on the phone, whatever it may be. And John has a passion about this to try to curb this. And he has an idea of putting little window decals in everybody's car that just reminds you not to do it. So if you're driving along the road and you see a decal in your car, it might, just might remind you, like,
oh,
you know.
Put down your phone.
Yeah, put down your phone. There's people's lives at stake.
Put both hands on that steering
wheel. Yeah, 10 and 2, 10 o'clock, 2 o'clock. So we invited John to be a part of our show. John, welcome to Casual Fridays.
Thanks to Jerry.
Now, we appreciate you very much being a part of the show. And also, when I met with you, you were so passionate. You said you were beyond passionate, and you were so beyond passionate that you choked up two or three times talking about this subject. I mean, it means that much to you.
Of course, Jerry. Jerry, listen, I knew I was going to be very nervous when I called you. So not to waste much of your time and make the best of the time that you're going to give it to me, I made some notes. So can I go through the notes in kind of a fast manner in order to get my point across?
I love about fast manners about anything. So, yeah, okay. I live in a bullet point kind of life, talking points. So, and go, John Zaboyan, go right ahead.
Well, of course, my subject is about distracted driving and its devastating effect on our society. But before you and I lose half of your audience because they have heard all they want to hear about how devastating distracted driving has been on our society and how stupid it is to think that you can eat and drink and socialize and make appointments, discuss personal issues, exchange recipes while you're driving.
Yeah,
you're so right, John. You really are right. It's funny, but it's funny because it's true.
Yeah. Dan heard that a car is not an office, a restaurant, or a fun room. A car is something that you get into it to go from one place to another.
And it can be a weapon.
You're not the only one on the road. You have to give your complete attention to your driving so you will not cause death or injuries to yourself and passengers in your car, but also others who are using the same road that you are on, who might become your innocent victims.
I like what you said to me when I met you, John. You said that cars to you are like speeding bullets, and they're just passing right by you, and any of those bullets can hit you at any moment.
Of course. And Jerry, this is where I really get nuts when I talk about innocent victims. And this is what I tell people in general. I really cannot do much about your life because I do not have the right to tell you how to live your life and what to eat, when to sleep, exercise, what kind of a car to buy, get what kind of a job to get, or take drugs, or blah, 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 blah. I cannot say anything because you are free. Whatever you do, it is your own personal choice. Until you get into your car and share the road that I have the right to be on as much as you are. That is where I have the right to demand that when you get into your car, put away all your vices and just drive, because when you do anything else but drive, you are jeopardizing my life. And I love my life. And this is when I also Well, again, this is what I, you know, this is when also I care and love about your life, because when I get into my car, I put all my distractions aside and pay all my attention to my driving, because my life and yours depend on my behavior on the road.
That's true. That's true. So you came up with this idea months ago, maybe longer, to help drivers avoid being tempted. These little window decals they could put in their the windows of their car, correct?
Actually, that kind of happened not with an aha moment, but it just took a little time. So basically, I have an obligation to behave in a manner to prevent your life and hurting you. so I thought it was a very simple exchange. I call it an even exchange. You know, we protect each other's lives while we're driving the same road. So you do not have the right to do anything else but drive when you're on the road, and I do not have the right to do anything else but to do the same thing while I'm on the road. So a few months ago, yes, you are right, we came up with not an organization. Students Against Distracted Driving did happen within about a few months, but if your listeners go to SAAD.org, it's SAADD.org, it kind of explains within a few short lines how everything happened. And the decals that we created, we do not know if it is a solution or a partial solution, but the Sheriff of Lake County, Sheriff of Chief of Police, Thomas Key of Highland on Indianapolis, and dozens of other company individuals and students from SAD think so. So the only thing we are attempting to do is get every car, hopefully the entire United States, have a little decal at the left-hand side corner of the windshield. So when you get into your car or anybody that gets into that particular car, they will see that little decal on the corner, and it merely reminds them that I do not have the right to do anything but just drive. So I will stay safe, and then the other person will stay safe also.
And you have hope that this will work with people. I mean, it's a tough sell, John. It's a tough sell because we are a culture that likes to multitask while we're driving. All of us in this room have driven. And, well, you know, Dan is against texting and driving. We were once in Chicago with Dan Clark, who runs the boards for our show. And I said, Dan, I sent you a text. Did you get it like 10 minutes ago? Nope. I don't check my text till I stop the car.
And I've – for me, it is very distracting to me.
Of course it is. It's dangerous. We all know it, but we still kind of do it. So, John, we only have a couple minutes left with this segment, but I want you to tell our listeners the same challenge you gave me. You, when I met with you, you placed your right hand on top of your cell phone as if it were a Bible, and you routinely ask other motorists to do the same thing. You ask them to, I swear on my cell phone that I will never be a distracted driver because it can possibly kill or injure other drivers. That's a challenge you would like people to take, correct?
Well, you know what? It's a challenge that reminds you, because when you're in your car and when you make that commitment before you get into your car, And when you reach in order to touch your telephone, you will go, oh, whoa, wait a minute, you dummy. You just made that statement to yourself is the fact that, or to somebody that gave you that decal is the fact that, no, I will not touch this telephone while I'm driving, period. You know, it's like beyond my understanding is that how anybody would even think that they can do anything else by driving while driving and not be distracted and then not kill. You know, one more thing that I would like to add is the fact that car companies add every device possible on the in the car, supposedly making our driving a little safer. How can you drive the hands-free because it is hands-free and not use your brain or your emotions when you're talking? Or how could the dashboard reading a text that you just received and not be distracted? This is like insanity. The only thing we can do is just leave everything alone, completely clean your brain, and just look at the road, because you've got cars to your left, right, up front, in the back, red light, people are stopping, people are cutting in front of you. It's like a battle zone.
Just drive. That's John's mantras. Mm-hmm. Just drive.
And John, listen to the lakeshore.
And listen to the lakeshore while you're driving. Yeah, you can listen. That's all. That's all you can do is listen. John, my column runs in Monday's Post Tribune. It's going to run online over the weekend. I hope people get a hold of this. I hope they check out your websites, saadd.org. John, thanks for being a part of Casual Fridays.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity, Jerry. Thank you, my friends, very much.
You're very welcome. Take care. Yeah, he choked up a couple times when I met him. Mm-hmm. He was so serious about this issue. We have a few minutes left on today's show. A couple things I want to make a mention of. We had a gentleman on our show previously. His name is Tim, and he's creating Gears of Hope Bike Ride, taking place Saturday, June 24th. And he's not getting enough riders for that. And Karen and I might do this. If we're in town, we might do it. It's 25-mile bike ride, a 50-mile bike ride, and a 100-mile bike ride.
We're going to do the 25-mile bike ride.
Plus the 50 and 100.
No, we're not
just
doing
the 25. So if you want to take part in it, you could check out the it's on Saturday, June 24th. The website is acsgearsofhope.org. And if you want to be a rider,
the charity
you can join us.
For?
American Cancer Society.
American Cancer Society.
Yeah,
very cool.
So either way, you could check that out. It's a good cause, great cause. And it's always fun. Karen and I have done a lot of bike rides through the years, mm-hmm. and we always have fun doing it, except I have to wear a helmet, which I always dread, but that's just me.
You gotta be safe, Jerry.
Gotta be
safe.
Yeah,
put down that phone and put your helmet on.
Yeah, I don't do any of the above very well. Something else I'll make a mention of, this Monday in a couple days, Karen and I will be at the Lake County Library at 7 o'clock, the one here on US 30, talking about issues in the region and talking about the new book, Crooked Politics, Northwest Indiana. Mm-hmm. And we always have a question and answer period, and all the questions are usually about the craziest things, not always about my books or my job, of course. It's about issues in the region and how we feel about this, mm-hmm. Donald Trump, fake news. Mm-hmm. So if you want to join us, it's Lake County Library here in Maryville this Monday, 7 o'clock. Sound good?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. Something else I made a mention of earlier in the show I want to at least touch on. Are you guys familiar with the Chicago author who recently died, Amy Krauss Rosenthal? Have you ever heard of her before?
Well, thanks to you, I have.
Okay. Not beforehand?
Not beforehand.
She's wrote like 28 children's picture books.
Oh, my gosh.
And several memoirs. And she was just a prolific writer and very touching. I love the way she writes. Well, she died last Monday, I think earlier this Monday, at age 51 from ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. But before she did, 10 days before she died, published in the New York Times, she wrote a essay/column/dating profile called You May Want to Marry My Husband, because she's trying to give her husband, who she loves so much, of 26 years married together, the gift of happiness after her death. And she wrote this column essay, 1,300 words roughly, explaining how wonderful he is, what a great guy, what a great dad, what a great man he is. And if you're interested in such a great guy and you want to fall in love with him like I did, she wrote, then here's how to do this.
This sounds like it's more for him than it is as a dating profile, like more to make him.
It was, of course.
Yeah.
It was an homage to him, so to speak. But in a way, it was like, but it made me think of how many of us can do the same. If we're diagnosed with a terminal illness and we know we're going to die somewhat soon, whether a few days or a few weeks or a few months, how many of us are strong enough, brave enough, courageous enough to put that out there? Like, you want your spouse to be happy, right?
That's
but
definitely.
Do you want them to find another true love that's just as great as ours, just as great as yours? And that's a conundrum. So I wrote about that. It's running in Monday's Post Tribune, challenging not only readers, but challenging myself. Like, how would I feel like with Karen? Yeah, if I get this diagnosis and I still want Karen to be happy after we're done, but
I want her to wear black all the time.
Yeah, find somebody, but find
miserable
a schmo, not the best guy in the world. So that's the conundrum that Amy put out out there for us. That's the conundrum, the challenge I'm putting out there also. Wow. So check it out in my column. It's running over this weekend, I think, in Sunday's Post-Tribune, and I'll on my Facebook page soon. Okay, we're at the end of the hour. Here comes the music. It's like the Oscars here, you know.
We're playing us off.
Thanks for tuning in. I appreciate our guest, Herb, for calling in, Josh and John. And we hope you have a wonderful St. Paddy's Day with some of the trivia we gave you.
Be safe out there, guys. Come on.
Have a wonderful weekend and
have a casual Friday.
All right, guys. Take care.